Hi everyone, this is Janice, your neighborhood nutritionist. I've spent the last couple of years helping busy office professionals upgrade their health through upgrading their nutrition. And one thing was very obvious. Nobody's got time to read up on all the scientific stuff to know fact from fiction. So each week, I will talk to you about a different topic or concept in nutrition in simple, everyday terms, so you are empowered to make the best nutritional decisions. Get ready to learn about some new stuff, gain new insights into old concepts, and super boost your health. Hey everyone, I am super, super excited today to have Dr. Mac, Melissa McDonald, to talk to us about chiropractic. So Dr. Mac, welcome to my podcast and thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I think when I first reached out to talk to you, chiropractic, I didn't even know the noun for this was chiropractic. I've only heard of chiropractors. So that shows how little I know about this topic. And before we really go into more details about what chiropractic is, do you mind sharing with us your journey about, you know, why you became a chiropractor, how you got interested in this area?
Absolutely. So all growing up, I wanted to get into some form of medicine. I wanted to work with people. I wanted to help them, get them better, heal them, however ways possible. And I started shadowing physicians in every discipline, surgeons, family practice, optometrists, dentists, just everything, physical therapy, chiropractic, trying to find this specialty that just made me happy. Because if you're going to invest that amount of money to go to school, you probably should invest it in something you enjoy and have a passion for.
Absolutely.
So I initially wanted to be a surgeon because I had grown up watching Grey's Anatomy and I had been sold on the mystique of the OR. And then with working with the surgeons, I just, it wasn't Grey's Anatomy. Mm. And this really led me down the path of, one, in the United States, our healthcare system is very broken. I didn't like how things were very much dictated for what the patient would get based on what the insurance would cover. They had better things they could do, but insurance wouldn't cover it. So they had to do the lesser thing. And I didn't like that. So I started to look into chiropractic because there was the opportunity to not have to be within the insurance system and actually be able to take care of people with what they need to be taken care of for. While I was in school, I got what I call the sports bug. I started working as an emergency medical technician on sidelines. I realized I could handle if you broke a leg or went into cardiac arrest. But if you sprained your ankle, I needed a better handling on rehab. And that, after graduating with my doctorate, led me to do a fellowship for 2 years in sports chiropractic. And now I'm internationally and nationally certified. And that's predominantly who I work with are very active adults. I'm the team chiropractor for Minnesota Roller Derby, the Minnesota Pride, and the team clinician for a drum corps international marching band, River City Rhythms. So now I get to be my own boss, go out, play on the field, but also see patients in clinic. So I can see them get injured, immediately treat them, then bring them back to my clinic, adjust them, provide rehab, do whatever they need to get them back off the sideline and on the field.
I love it. You sound like a woman on a mission.
A little bit.
And I've actually always wanted to watch a roller derby live because, you know, I've seen the TV show, I've seen videos, and it looks savage, if I'm honest.
I can confirm it is absolutely one of the most brutal sports that I work with. But those athletes, those skaters just love and have a passion for what they're doing. So it makes it so much fun. And it's so rewarding when if they get hurt in a bout, I have about a month to get them back onto the rink. And that makes it a really fun challenge. So depending upon the injury, I mean, of course, If they break their ankle, I'm kind of limited. But if it's a sprain or a strain or a concussion, that's definitely within my wheelhouse to get them back off the bench and onto the rink to get them skating again. And I just find that so much fun.
Yeah. And speaking of fixing people, I'm much more familiar with physiotherapy, having been to a physiotherapist for a long time. Can you maybe tell us, what does a chiropractor do compared to a physio? Because I think a lot of people, even on Facebook, you can see videos, and usually people associate that with a lot of bone cracking and pulling in directions.
So I will say that if you look up chiropractic on social media or on YouTube, you're going to see some drastically different techniques. That's what makes chiropractic kind of fun. There are hundreds of different adjusting techniques, and the adjustment is kind of what defines and makes us different. Granted, I will say this, in the United States, I know physical therapists manipulate, which is same side of the coin. An adjustment, a manipulation, they're essentially the same thing. They both cause the popping sound, the cavitation. And that sound actually is the joint being pulled apart just slightly, and the gas, predominantly, I believe, oxygen and nitrogen, falling out of solution and creating a popping noise, similar to how if you pop a champagne bottle, the bubbles that were in it fall out of the liquid and they create a little mini explosion. What that does is it just creates a little bit more joint space so that if that joint hadn't been moving as well, it's going to move better. Now, here's something I'm going to tell you. If you see a chiropractor that is following the best evidence, the best research, and doing their due diligence to stay on top of it, you're really not going to be able to tell a difference between a physio and a chiropractor. They look very similar. Now, there are chiropractors that are traditionalist or straight chiropractic, and all they do is adjust. It does not get you better faster. So you need to find a chiropractor that is doing what's going to be best for you, which is getting you moving. Our biggest issue with pain and low back pain and other forms of pain is prior we thought, hey, we want you to ice and we want you to sit on the couch and rest. Now we're realizing that we need to listen to the physics principle of an object in motion remains in motion. An object at rest remains at rest. If we want people to keep moving, we need to load them optimally when they're injured and make sure that we're keeping that injured object moving safely. And that's where when you have a chiropractor that's working within the evidence, you're not only not going to be able to tell the difference between them and a physio.
Okay, that makes sense. And I guess kind of related, when should someone see a chiropractor versus seeing a physio? Because I think when I had injuries, or they're not really injuries, they're more like something, you know, I overdid it with some muscles. At least when I consulted with my workplace who, you know, provided physical therapy, I wasn't really given an option to see a chiropractor.
So you can see a chiropractor for a lot of the same things that you see a physio for. And really, you should see who you have access for and is affordable to you. That's going to be the best provider for you, because you don't want the strain of financial stresses affecting whether you're going to get care or not. But how I like to look at it is there are specific things that physios are 1,000 times better at than a chiropractor. And that really goes into post-surgical rehabilitation. When you've just had surgery and you need rehab, a physio is going to be much better at it than a chiropractor, to be completely honest. But this is how I like to look at it. A physio will get you back to your activities of daily living. You're able to dress yourself. You're able to drive. You're able to get to work and do your work. But that doesn't necessarily mean you're able to go to the gym and work out. That doesn't necessarily mean you can go in the backyard and play with your kids. That's a great place to have the chiropractor come in after your physical therapy may not may no longer be covered by your insurance, and have the chiropractor just kind of polish off, get you to that next stage and get you back to the activities you love. So I actually like to co-manage and work with physical therapists with my patients. This way we get the best of both spectrums. It's really not one or the other. It's how do we mesh together to get you back to what you want to do. It's all about you as the patient. It's not about me kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. It's what's complementary, I guess, to each other.
Hey, did you know EmbodyMe is a one-stop shop virtual wellness studio for busy people like you? You can find hosts, live streaming, yoga, fitness, meditation, breathwork, EFT tapping, moon ceremonies, women's circles, intuitive dance, and so much more, all in one place. Now, if you want to get to your best mental, physical, and spiritual state, sign up now for 20% off your first month with promo code NOTADIET. That's promo code NOTADIET. Sign up today at embodyme.live.
And I guess, just out of curiosity, where did chiropractic come from?
Oh, I've got this. We are actually an infantile profession in the grand scheme of things. We were created in the United States, actually just south of here in Davenport, Iowa, by BJ and Dee Dee Palmer. And they, if you look into them, I think Dee Dee Palmer was originally a magnetic healing salesman, and he performed his first adjustment on an individual's neck, and it restored the man's healing, and that's the entire basis of our profession. And he wrote a considerable number of books. They're called the Green Books, and it is the ultimate philosophical basis of chiropractic. But they theorized that we were doing a bone out of place model, meaning the bone is actually physically subluxated, so not fully dislocated, but partially luxated, and that we're adjusting it back into place. And I'm here to tell you, that's not what the research shows. If you have a subluxated joint where your shoulder is partially dislocated, you need to go see your emergency room doctor, not your chiropractor. What we treat is, it's called somatic dysfunctions, which is a really fancy word for the joint is not moving and is functioning as well as compared to another joint. So if I'm treating, if you're having right shoulder pain, I'm going to assess your shoulder and then I'm going to compare it to the left side and I'm going to find the positions that the shoulder's not moving properly. I'm also going to do muscle testing to see if you have any muscles that aren't functioning as well as other muscles. So looking for any weaknesses, I'm going to be palpating, looking for any trigger points. And then I'm going to be, if I find an adjustment that a sticky point that I need to adjust, I'll adjust. If it's more soft tissue based, I'm going to do soft tissue. If you need rehab, I'm going to do rehab. And in all honesty, you probably need the rehab more than anything else. And the adjustment, if we can just get you into a position that gets you out of pain, you're going to be more likely to do your rehab. So I like to think of my adjustments are there to get the pain to a manageable point that I can get you moving to do your exercises. Because I don't want you to have to be reliant on my adjustment to function. You shouldn't have to go to your chiropractor every single day. You shouldn't have to be slaven to your chiropractor every single week. It should be something that helps you when you need it, when you need to have that next level of performance, when you're having that pain. But ultimately, you should be able to manage your body at home through exercise. And that's, again, we have the founding of chiropractic. We're barely 100 years old. It was founded here in America, which is why it's much more prevalent. There are still only 14 schools, and they really are on a spectrum of whether they're going to be traditionally historical philosophy based, or if they're going to be more evidence-based. And for me, that was an important part of my decision on what school I was going to go to, is I needed a science evidence-based curriculum for me to even survive in this profession. So historically, we're an infant, we're a baby. We were created similar times to when PTs were created and when doctors of osteopathic medicine were created, and we just went our own route with it.
I mean, that's a very exciting place to be, though, because I guess, you know, although, you know, it is 100 years, it's not like 1 year, but I think it's really good in a way that, you know, perhaps even you or your colleagues can actually be a part of shaping how you guys want this to be, instead of, you know, some medical treatments I feel are very set in stone because they've been around for so long that it becomes very hard to adapt to what modern life requires.
I completely agree. And that's where a lot of research actually coming out of the UK concerning orthopedic surgery is just fascinating, because there have been the gold standard surgeries. Probably one of my favorite examples is shoulder impingement. Shoulder impingement surgeries have been done for years. They've been done the same way. They haven't had anything drastically change with them, but they've never been compared in a randomized controlled trial, meaning we have a placebo group, we have a control group, and we have the actual treatment group. And the UK finally did it. And they found that especially for shoulder impingement, whether you have surgery or not, it's more about the rehab. But people are more willing to do their rehab if they think they've had surgery than if they haven't, because they attribute, oh, my shoulder hurts and I'm going to push through the pain because the pain's from surgery. That's fine. I'm willing to push through this. So it's really showing from the musculoskeletal standpoint that rehab and movement might be better for our bodies than surgery. And the research is starting to come out and support that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I tell my clients too, as a nutrition coach. Sure, we can have a call every day, so I watch you eat good things, but that's not the point. Ultimately, I want you to be my client once for one program and never come back to me, because this is, you know, it's your life, right? And it should become part of your life instead of, I guess, a quick fix every time we talk. And in terms of chiropractic treatments, are there any restrictions around, you know, is it suitable for, you know, older people or other health conditions, or is it actually good for everybody?
So I'm going to say that it is generally safe and effective for everyone, but I'm going to put some caveats. There are, of course, going to be certain conditions and, frankly, health concerns that are we're going to want to make sure that we're taking into account, which is why when a patient shows up to my clinic, I do a comprehensive health history. I spend 30 to 40 minutes with them just taking their history, doing an exam, figuring out, are you a good candidate for care with me? And big things are, if you're going to have, let's say, the little kiddos, infants, pediatrics treated, make sure you find a provider that has specialized in that. Because frankly, kids and infants are tiny little aliens. They are not just miniaturized adults. They need to have specialized care. For older adults, it's a similar thing. Granted, they have more complicated health histories. They have more complicated health problems. So they need a provider that's more informed on that. And we have to be cautious about how we're treating them because of potential maybe osteoporosis or some other changes to their bone structure, maybe due to like fusion of bones, maybe because of rheumatoid arthritis or some other conditions that can cause the bones to just kind of connect together. I'm thinking of DISH, which is a really ridiculous name, a shortened name for disco idiopathic spondylo something. It's fairly common in adults who have diabetes, and it's just something that we need to account for because we could really harm our patients. Things that I take a good, long, hesitant look at before I touch someone. One, if someone has cancer, I want to make sure that I am a part of the care team. I've talked to their oncologists, I've talked to who they're working with, and I make sure that they feel they're safe to be working with me and that there isn't any underlying cancer within the bones that I need to be concerned with, because that softening of the bones, I have a higher likelihood of fracturing them.
Right.
Anyone with connective tissue disorders, so Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is one that comes to mind, and that's where the actual collagen, which is basically what glues us all together and holds us together, didn't form correctly, and they have hypermobility. Well, I don't necessarily want to be adjusting them in a hypermobile state, because I can physically harm them and push their body beyond their normal range. And then there's also vascular concerns. Big things that chiropractors always get like scared for are strokes. Chiropractic within the medical community is probably the thing that we are attributed to. And I'm going to say, at no point in any of the research has chiropractic ever been associated directly with a stroke. You have the same risk of having a stroke going to your medical doctor, your physio, or even going and getting your hair washed. And what chiropractors, the issue is if you're presenting with a stroke, you present with neck pain and a headache. Well, if you trust your chiropractor and you're having this neck pain and headache, that's kind of the bread and butter. Headaches and low back pain are the bread and butter of a chiropractic practice. So it makes sense that those individuals would seek out care. Our job, again, it all comes back to the history and exam. Everyone can go through a history and exam and make sure that they are a good candidate for care. But there are going to be pieces that we as doctors need to take into account to rule them in or out. Like a hypermobile patient, I'm not going to adjust them, but I'm going to send them home with stability exercises. So it's more about finding what works for that patient and what they need. Again, it's patient-centered care. It's not doctor-centered care.
Yeah, I'm getting that message loud and clear. I think definitely, you know, this is such, you're setting such a good example, you know, that it really should be about the person you're treating, right? And I think just on my mind, I'm thinking, with chiropractic treatments, and I get that, you know, it's impossible to generalize a response to this, but do problems usually take a few times or over time to fix? Like, as in, I guess the adjustments, are they a temporary fix, or can things be fixed in one go?
So generally, nothing can be fixed in one go. There is no magic bullet that's just going to be like, boom, this is it. There's always going to be a component of work behind it. But that's why you're given exercises. That's why you're given things to do at home to support the care that we do in office. On average, I would say care ranges, maybe if you come in and it was like a very minor, maybe just a little twinge in your low back, you decided to get in right away versus wait for weeks, hoping it would go away, trying to do things at home by yourself. That might only be like a 4-visit thing, where we start fairly aggressive, maybe seeing you 2 times 1 week and then space it out as you improve. But generally speaking, I would say it takes 8 to 12 visits to really, one, start aggressive when you're in acute phase. And I mean, I've had people come in that can barely walk because they're having a massive flare. They have a disc that has bulged and is compressing on a nerve, and they are in excruciating pain. That is going to take a lot more work, but it's still only going to take about 8 to 12 visits to get back to where you want to be normally with home exercise. Now, there are chiropractors that use larger treatment plans, and that is more doctor-centered care than patient-centered care. You shouldn't be asked up front to purchase 30, 60 visits. One, you don't need that much. Two, who is that really about? Are they doing a re-exam to actually figure out why, at what point you need to get better? Because in my practice, if I'm seeing you and I see you like three times and we haven't made a significant change, I'm throwing out what I've done. I'm reexamining, I'm reassessing, and I'm figuring out, okay, my initial diagnosis wasn't exactly right. What did I miss? Where do I need to nuance down? Because you presented with X, Y, and Z, and it fit this mm-hmm. diagnosis, but clearly, clearly I missed what was actually the final problem. And this has happened when I have patients coming in with, let's say, carpal tunnel syndrome, and they're mm-hmm. having excruciating hand and wrist pain. Okay, so we treat mm-hmm. the hand and wrist, and we get some relief, but not full relief. So then I start creeping up the arm because it's hard. One thing is hard to convince a patient, hey, I know you're having pain in your hand, but I really need to treat into your shoulder because that's where the problem is.
Mm.
So sometimes it's working on the area the patient comes in, treating it, and then following the problem to its origin so mm-hmm. that the patient understands better what's going on. Because it is challenging when you're coming in and all you have is maybe a high school basic sciences, maybe you have some college basic sciences, but if you haven't gone to a medical type programming, understanding how pain can refer from through our body, like, oh, this muscle called the subscapularis underneath mm-hmm. your shoulder blade, when it gets angry, it can cause compression on the brachial plexus, which then can cause complete numbness into your wrist and hand. Meaning if you go and have carpal tunnel surgery, you haven't actually treated the point that the nerve is compressed. So you're still mm-hmm. going to have pain after the surgery because the problem isn't in your wrist, it's in your shoulder, but you're only having symptoms in your wrist. It hurts my head just figuring it out and trying to sometimes convince patients of what's going on. You have to trace the problem to the origin so that they can see the picture. And this is where we work through that together. We change, we modify, we ebb and flow. No visit should be the same for every patient. There should be some transition, some gradient. We start at the base and we move all the way up the mountain so that, again, if we never progress, you're not going to get back to what you want to do.
I'd actually like to now jump into talking about weird and wonderful things that people buy on, you know, Amazon and try to heal themselves. So actually with chiropractic, one of the things I've seen online are these beds that can spin you around. And I don't know anyone who uses them, but I think you're strapped into this board and it kind of spins around or bends you or something.
I think you're talking about inversion tables.
Probably.
So you strap like your ankles in and it flips you upside down and you hang there.
Yeah. So what is that?
So the theory behind an inversion table is that because we spend all our time standing up straight and mm-hmm. that directly pulls gravity down through our spine, compressing our spine, theoretically, if we flip ourselves upside down, we can decompress our spine and stretch it out by hanging there. And that is kind of supported and it is an okay thing, but there are so many things you have to take into consideration. That is not a safe modality. That is not a safe type of care for everyone. If you have high blood pressure, if you have any form of cardiac health issue, if you have migraines, if you are an older adult that has like orthostatic hypotension, all of those things are going to be big no-nos that could trigger you to pass out, which then if you pass out in that position, that could cause a number of blood pooling in places you don't want blood pooling and can lead to significant brain damage and cardiac arrest and So yes, it can stretch out your back, but you have to make sure that you're healthy enough for that activity. There are safer methods that are done in physio and chiropractic offices for spinal decompression that can be utilized other than an inversion table. So that one, I get a little very hesitant to say that it's a good thing because there are so many ways that it could hurt you if you haven't made sure you're healthy enough to do it.
That makes sense. And okay, next item is the very popular Theragun.
Oh.
Now, I have tried it at a health exhibit, and I'm terrified of them because they are so powerful. And I remember I had someone demo it on me, and obviously this is all pre-COVID. And I remember that moment when it made contact with my knee, and I was like, right, this is something I will never do.
So vibracussion, so just having that kind of, and there are hundreds of different type of vibration type of massage guns on the market. Mm-hmm. And here's what I'm going to say. You either love them or you hate them. And there is no middle ground. What it does is it gives you the sensation of feeling as if it's breaking up the lactic acid. That's not what it's actually doing. It's when it comes to pain, we're gonna take a little jaunt. Back me up if I start going too into the research weeds. When it comes to pain, we have one mechanical insult. Okay, I cut my finger. I clearly see it injured. It's painful. We also have pain where we're looking at our leg and we're going, oh my gosh, my leg hurts. I don't have a bruise. I don't know why it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
When we have pain that doesn't have an actual mechanical insult, this could just be our body's psychosocial pain response. So we can have pain because we're stressed. We can have pain because we're remembering something that caused us pain and now we're having reflexive memory pain. But ultimately, we also can have pain when we go to the gym and we go a little too heavy in the squat rack, not like what I did yesterday. Please don't judge me if I have to stand up. And what the Theragun or what the vibration guns do is it actually overstimulates our nervous system. Our nervous system goes, whoa, way too much. Oh my gosh. I don't even know what's going on, and therefore it can no longer send pain signals.
Right.
So it just, okay. It basically overwhelms our system and it's like, okay, no, it doesn't hurt anymore. No more pain. So yes, does it make you feel better? Absolutely. Does it fix the underlying reason why you had an issue? No. But if it gets you to the point that you can move better and move with normal biomechanics, that's going to help you recover faster. So I love them. My athletes love them. But if you don't like them, they're loud, they're noisy, they can be rather aggressive, then it's not for you. That's no big deal.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love a very, very hard, very high pressure deep tissue massage. So the pain is not the issue. I just feel like I'm being punched, basically.
No, and that like fully makes sense. That fully makes sense.
And just to cover a few more things before we finish off, because this is such an interesting conversation, especially for me. The very controversial kinesio tape. I remember during the Olympics, every Olympic, right? All the sideline, you know, armchair commentators are like, what's all this taping about, right? Are people that injured? Are they preventing injury? So I've personally had them applied by my physio to, you know, hold things in place for a day or two. But I don't know, I guess I question it sometimes when you can so easily buy it yourself. And when I wasn't able to do my physio sessions because of COVID, my physio did say, right, you know, if we want, you know, we can do a video session and I can try to teach you to apply it. But actually, it wasn't that easy. So what are your thoughts on self-applied kinesio tape?
So one thing is, I'm just going to go into it. There are hundreds of different tapes on the market. Mm-hmm. And yes, you have kinesiology tape. And you have to kind of talk about the tape on a spectrum. You have your white athletic tape, which is used for straight up bracing. This is your traditional white ankle tape that you see in most athletic events. Then you have your kinesiology tape kind of on the opposite spectrum. And then in the middle, you have something called dynamic tape. And dynamic tape is not something you can access without being a provider. And that's my favorite type of tape. But what makes kinesiology tape, so they've made a lot of claims that it decreases pain, that it lifts the tissue, that it does all this stuff. And they've done research, and that's not what it does. Here's the best explanation we have for why it works, because it does. You put it on when it's applied and you have less pain in the area that you applied it in, is it comes back again to our stinking nervous system and how it interprets pain. One way our body will create pain is if it's lost that body part in space. And that sounds really weird, but proprioception, which is our body's awareness of where it is in space, is so important, and it's easily damaged when we have an injury. So when we roll our ankle, we lose that ankle proprioception. So it's easier for us to like step off a ledge or step on a crack and have our ankle roll, because we don't have the same awareness that we had prior to the injury. This can go into our shoulders. This can go into our low back. This especially can go into our abdominal area, especially after pregnancy. And what the kinesiology tape does is it's applied on the skin. It triggers our mechanoreceptors, and the body goes, oh, hey, there's that body part. I remember where it is. I no longer need to create pain in that area for me to know where it is. I have the tape giving me some feedback on where that body part is. So really, kinesiology tape is just providing proprioception. Now, my favorite tape, dynamic tape, which when applied improperly can feel like kinesiology tape, but when it's applied correctly, it actually is a offloading tape. It has intense elastic capabilities, so that if you're having shin splints, I can actually offload that muscle so that it no longer has to work, and your foot is just brought up by the tape. I can also use it to load your muscles. So if I want you to kick further or throw further or slow your arm down when you're throwing so your muscles don't have to work as hard, depending upon how I apply the tape, I can either load your arm or I can help decelerate it for you, thus decreasing injury. But that's a different type of tape. Kinesiology is really just about where your body is in space and allowing it to have that awareness, which thus decreases pain and improves function.
Yeah, when you talked about losing that awareness, it instantly made me think of, you know, when you put little booties on dogs and then suddenly they don't know how to walk.
Exactly. That's, oh my God, that's exactly.
So the last, I guess, home remedy range I wanted to bring up and get your thoughts on are the more topical treatments. So I'm thinking your deep heat, your tiger balm, your, you know, freeze sprays, essential oils. So given that they are topically applied, sometimes I just wonder, is that, you know, cooling menthol or, you know, the deep heat feeling, is that, again, that's, you know, something that's just superficially distracting, or does it actually help with the inflammation or any other problems that you might be having deeper in your body?
I think it depends upon the topical. There are a number of different topicals, and depending upon the ingredients in them, they do actually can be absorbed into your skin and provide a little bit deeper relief. Arnica is a big one for alleviating some of that discomfort. When it comes to essential oils, definitely if you're going to be applying them, you can't just directly apply an essential oil to your body. You need to mix it with a carrier oil, such as like a coconut oil or an olive oil. So that way you only need like one or two drops of essential oil, and then you use the carrier oil to disperse it. That way you don't have any skin irritation. Now, when it comes to what people like in that avenue, whatever feels good is going to be the best one. I'm a big fan of things that create heat because if I'm looking at it topically, we're working on muscles and muscles feel better when they're warm. Why do you warm up before your exercise? Why do you do movement? We want to create warmth. So I like to use heating products versus if I'm really looking at a cooling, I honestly don't use ice. I don't use cooling if I'm going to be completely honest. unless I physically watch someone hurt themselves, I almost never use ice because so much research right now is changing with our understanding of how inflammation helps us heal and the actual need for inflammation that I'm like, but so I like heating products. I'm not a big like believer in essential oils. And I, if you like it and it makes you feel better, great. Does it replace regular medical care? Gosh, no. So if it helps you and it makes you feel calmer and it lowers your anxiety, but you're also seeing a counselor, cool. Use your essential oils. That's awesome. But if you're using it as a replacement, that's a big issue. So I find topicals. I like China gel. It's one of my favorite topicals. It's what I do all my soft tissue work with. I like it because it does. It's not an oil base. So it dries without getting sticky or oily. And it's a topical that I can actually then apply tape over if I need to tape anyone. I also don't have to worry about it getting on my patient's clothes because, again, it's not going to stain because it's not an oil base. So China gel is my absolute favorite.
And before we go, I just wanted to get your three actionable tips, I guess, for people to take better care of their musculoskeletal health. And
so my biggest three tips, and these are really simple: move, sleep, and drink water. You need to get up and move. I don't know what move means to you. That could be maybe dancing in your living room. That could be going on a walk. That could be going to the gym and lifting heavy weights. I don't know what brings you joy, but you just need to move. Sleep, our body's ability to heal, our body's ability to function, our overall mental well-being all comes from our base area of sleep. Do you need 8 hours? Maybe. Do you need 6 hours, 10 hours? I don't know. Everybody's sleep is a little different, but you also need to get quality sleep. It's not just going and laying in bed for 8 hours staring at your ceiling and thinking that's good sleep. You need to actually wake and feel rested and feel ready for the day. So move, sleep, and then drink water. Drinking water, especially now that most of us are still at home during the pandemic, can be hard because we have access to our coffee pot. We have access to other beverages, and we just need to take the time to actually drink water. This is also how we hydrate ourselves. Majority of our body is water. If you do those three things, you're going to feel better.
Yeah, I mean, I can't agree more with these three, and absolutely extremely actionable, I would say. And Dr. Mack, the last question I have for you is, what is the one food that always takes you to your happy place?
Mine is Vietnamese rice noodle salads bun. I crave it. I want the deep fried pork egg roll on top. I want the fish sauce. And I just, now I'm going to have that tonight.
And that's it for this episode of Neighborhood Nutritionist. Thank you so much for spending this time with me. And I hope you've really enjoyed it and learned something you can take away with you today. If you could take a second to share this episode with one person you think will love it, that would be absolutely amazing. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening now. See you soon!